Hello and welcome to the Raptors Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, William Liu. I am joined by Sportsnet's Amy Otterbert for the first half of this program. Amy, how you doing?
Hey, well, I'm great. It's game day. How are you?
It is once again game day. Yeah, the Raptors will take on the Chicago Bulls in Chicago tonight at the United Center. And look, let's look back at the game that we just covered yesterday. You know, the Raptors defeating the Hornets by a score of 125-113. Actually, let's first start here, actually, because this was not the main thing of the game. It was kind of just like a random tidbit. But so Justin Champagne gets ejected, right? And I'm not sure if you caught this, but I was watching the replay of this happening where Champagne goes down the tunnel and Masai standing by the tunnel where he usually kind of posts up for a while there. And Masai gives him a fist bump to Justin as he's ejected. Very similar to when OG got ejected last year when he flipped Dennis Schroeder. And I see you just sitting right there. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's AV's spot during the game. So
yeah, it's quiet. That was about as most action as you get in the tunnel these days. Come on now, an ejection and a fist bump. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I bring this up because obviously, like, you know, there's been a couple of things that's happened there. I mean, obviously, I remember like a couple of months back, like, there was that game where Scotty ran out the tunnel and got super excited. And,
yeah,
and you got worried for a second, too, because he tripped right in front of you, right?
If you notice, if I'm sitting in the tunnel, I'm like super like making sure I'm tucked in. Like, even though I had nothing to do with Scotty falling, I just want to make that clear. It certainly was like, hey, this is pretty tight back here.
The overall arena experience is quite weird, and I think I actually do want to get in to you with that later in the program, actually. But let's actually just talk about the performance up first, because the Raptors easily handled the Hornets. To be honest, I didn't think it was going to be an easy game coming in. Obviously, you're missing two starters, two key ball handlers for you in Fred and Scotty Barnes, who are both questionable once again for the game tonight against the Bulls. We'll see if they suit up or not. But it turns out there was nothing to worry about. The Raptors started big, didn't start a point guard. They said, Pascal, you run the point, and you did a great job of it. And of late, so Pascal last night, 12 assists, right? Missed a triple-double by a rebound. If you look back at his overall numbers, he's up to like about 7 assists per game in the last month, and he's really turned it on here. He's been, I would say, unquestionably the Raptors' best player over the last month or so, since he's really found his stride. And I wanted to get your thoughts on sort of what's behind some of his success of late, especially with the playmaking.
Well, I think that's it, right? Is that Pascal's found this really nice line of he's talked about it because he's drawing so much attention now defensively. I think it's that he's mastered that, how long to keep it, when to give it up, who to give it up to, just like the total package. I know that sounds kind of funny, but I mean, he's talked about, especially his relationship with assistant coach Earl Watson Jr. and how much Earl Watson Jr. has been telling, you know, really kind of putting that, just being patient with the ball, right? Because when you have the ball in your hands, especially in today's NBA, I think a lot of times it's go, go, go. Who do I get it to? Get this thing moving. But he's just really done a great job of finding that balance of, like, of course, I think one-on-one Pascal can get to the rim on almost anybody in this league, whether it's by his length or his quickness. But he's seeing the rotation, seeing the help, and then just at his size, he can pass. He can see, he can pass. And it's really coming together nicely. I always say with the assist stat, that means someone's got to make a bucket, or you make a great pass and someone misses a bucket, so you don't get it. So it's a credit to the entire team, right? But I mean, he certainly has just been a complete pleasure to watch. He's been, not even his numbers are great, but I'm more impressed with the consistency in them. Like, it's one thing to have a good night, but Pascal's been having many, many really, really good nights, and you're seeing some wins too. So it's no coincidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the key thing with Pascal too is, so he's obviously grown so much as a player from when he came in as a rookie, and, you know, he started from day one, but, you know, was kind of he started, but he might have played like less than some bench guys. You know, it was like a 10-minute, 12 minutes per game kind of deal, even though he was starting. And he was clearly very raw, and he went down to the G League and he won the championship and he developed his skills there. And just seeing him grow year after year, it's been really, really encouraging to see from him. And I think, you know, maybe last year in Tampa was the only year you could really say Pascal stagnated in his development. I think there were still small things that he worked on and improved on around the edges. I think some of the playmaking was starting to take place last year too. But last year was probably the one year where he stagnated. And I think a lot of the fan base kind of turned on him between that and the bubble. And I think just seeing him now, like, thriving, playing really well. And I think the biggest change, too, is just he's starting to really do a great job of making other people better, right? As you mentioned, he's drawing the double team all the time, which means that everyone else can just kind of play off of that. You know, it's obviously a lot harder on offense if you can't draw a double team. If there's nobody to really double, then you're really having to create and really trying to execute your screens and everything. It has to be really precise. But you saw the way the Hornets guarded him last night, even above the three-point line, which we know Pascal's not as consistent of a threat from the three-point line, but they were even trapping him out there, and he just kind of picked them apart. And that has to just really speak to just sort of how, you know, he's grown almost, you know, as a player, but also as a leader of the team who's able to sort of raise the level of his teammates.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you throw traps at somebody usually to try to get the ball out of their hands or to force them to pass the ball. So again, I mean, it's a credit to him because he kind of baits it in. But then again, if the guys around you aren't doing anything, then it's a great defense, right? But for the issue for the Hornets or for Charlotte last night was that the other guys were stepping up as well and hitting some shots. And I thought the offense for the Raptors looked pretty. I could, you know, I remember without Fred and without Scotty, that looked really solid last night. And again, it's because I think the start point is Pascal there.
Yeah, yeah. And it, you know what? It is really key for the other guys to hit shots. And I think the Raptors last night shot the ball really well, 16 to 34. I also think that there's something to the idea, like, they really trusted the pass, you know, in a sense. Because I think you could always, like, there's always a window for one to pass. And sometimes you sort of hit the later end of the guys as open as possible, or you try to make sure that there's no shot for yourself. But it felt like yesterday the Raptors were almost getting it out early. Like, the Hornets, I'm not sure what kind of defense they were playing, but they just seemed to be willing to trap the ball on the perimeter, no matter who it was, whether it was Gary or OG or Pascal or whoever. They were just trapping the ball quite a bit on the perimeter, which meant that they're almost forcing the Raptors into making some of these passes. And it just felt like the overall ball movement last night was quite good. 27 assists for the Raptors as a team. A lot of that was coming in transition. A lot of the outside shooting as well. And, you know, when you look at Chris Boucher knocking down two threes on three attempts, when you look at Precious Achiuwa hitting a corner three right away in one of the first plays of the game, it was just kind of set the tone for, like, okay, maybe on paper the Raptors aren't that good of a three-point shooting team. But when they start to hit threes, like, this team is really, really hard to beat.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because just yesterday I was having some conversations and we were talking about the half-court offense. Obviously, the numbers don't lie for the Raptors. Going into the game last night, the half-court offense has not been very strong, to say the least. But I, you know, I try to, you know, not just look at the numbers, but it's just the why, right? And the three-point shot in today's NBA, when you're settled into a half-court offense, I'd love your opinion, Will. I think you got to have four, like, reliant three-point shooters. You maybe can get away with three, but I'd like to say four, right? Four guys that can hit the three in today's game just to get the ball moving and to get the defense out of rotation, you know, stunt stays, shading. You got to guard every guy. And I think, well, obviously Fred checks that box, but Gary had been out a bit. OG and Scotty have really been trying to get more consistent from long range, but that's something that the Raptors were kind of missing in the last couple of weeks. And the other guy too is, I think, Kem Birch. I always say this, like, he's, in my opinion, one of the best screeners on the team. When you look at a half-court offense, if you can't hit shots or you can't find something you like, usually, especially with a guard like Fred, if you can give him a solid screen, like Stockton and Malone, right? Everyone knew what they were doing. No one could stop it. And so I think that just with the guys that were not available or just were not in their rhythm yet, not having that, those threats really kind of hurt them in the half-court offense. And, of course, you know, you got to get stops so you can run in transition. So it was really nice to see against, again, a good Charlotte team that has been playing really good basketball. I mean, that was just an awesome performance for the Raptors. And I mean, I don't think they were finding out too much before we all were that certain guys were not going to be available. So credit to the staff and to the guys for just showing up and being pros and getting the job done.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, like, when you have these games where some of your leaders are out, like, you really need someone to step on the line. To stop Pascal did such a great job. Like, you look at Precious, for example. He made three shots last night. All three were assisted by Pascal. Like, spoon-fed kind of shots. Yeah. Two kickouts for outside jumpers, one with a foot on the line. So, really, kind of two threes. And then another one where he cut behind the defense and Pascal found him for a dunk. Like, that's the kind of leadership that you need from a guy in that situation. And I think the other guy who brought a lot of leadership yesterday was Gary Trent Jr., who you got a chance to interview after the game. What, first off, actually, before we talk about Gary's game overall, what did you think of Gary wearing the headband on the neck the fashion choice there. Somehow he made.
Listen,
I found a new way to wear a headband.
So here's the thing with Gary is like when Gary interviews, you know, he's pretty like businesslike, but
soft spoken.
Awesome to talk to, but I'm telling you, when you want to talk fashion with Gary, like be prepared to be humbled because the guy is like the swag claim that I swag or fashion. So when I talk to him, like man, nothing surprises me, and I really don't think there looks that he can't pull off. I really like. I don't know if that's confidence. I don't know if some people are just born with it, but. To your point, he can wear the headband any way he wants. He pulls it off. He knows he's fly. Like, he's cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is, especially with him and also, I guess, with Serge and other guys who have really, like, you know, stepped up their fashion game with the Raptors. It's just like, you can't say specifically one thing is their fashion. Like, they're not just like for me, I know, I mean, I know there's no comparison whatsoever. Like, they're very, very clear. There's no comparison whatsoever. But I'm like, I know what I'm going to wear. It's going to be basics. It's going to be like, a long coat usually because I'm taller, and like that's like I know like what my lane is, like, you know, I'm not gonna try to do any of this other kind of stuff. There is no like specific box for some of these guys. You know, also I don't have the budget to wear like $1,000 pair of gloves or $3,000 worth of sweaters.
It was like the Gucci sweater in Milwaukee. I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I can't afford it. I mean, I don't think women can wear it exactly like that either and be acceptable for television, but it looked awesome. So good for Gary. I'm happy that outside of being a really good basketball player, which I know we're going to talk about too, I believe that the post I asked about, that he was called an NBA fashion icon, and I was like, yeah, I can see this. So good.
Absolutely.
For him.
he turned the headband into a choker. Like, this is innovation in fashion. Yeah. And in basketball. Let's talk about the game itself though. So he comes in 32 points. It's funny because he had actually been slumping a little bit of late. The last two games after he came back from the ankle swelling or that limited him for about a week or so. And two games since coming back, he shot 4-12 from the field and then 4-15. And then last night, I mean, he just decided the slump is over. Like, I actually was looking through the shots because I was pretty sure that I was watching the game. I was like, wow, Gary's making a lot of tough shots. And then I watched back on the film, and they were, like, tougher than I thought. I mean, like, yes, he definitely had catch-and-shoot opportunities. He's always going to get those. But there's a lot of situations where he's able to step in, side the arc, you know, get his defender backpedaling for, like, a step or two, and then pull up from that mid-range area. And he just has such a knack for doing that, in addition to the fact that you can get to the rim occasionally and make plays there. But it's just that perimeter shot creation ability, especially in a game like this where you don't have Fred, you don't have Scotty as well, so there's a lot of offenses you're missing from your lineup, especially on the perimeter. You know, Gary is just willing to step up and take some of these shots, and I think maybe just in terms of the shot creation ability on the perimeter, in terms of just getting the separation to get a clean jumper, he has such good footwork to get that off. And that might be the most polished part about his game, don't you think?
Yeah, but, you know, you brought it up towards the end there when you said without Fred. And I think that Gary's, again, I think he's a tremendous basketball player, but he's an elite competitor. And you can't measure on the box score. And I really don't know what the answer is. But sometimes when you are an elite competitor, there's like a different switch. Okay, I have to do this. Like, it's a different, and I'm not saying that's what happened, but it could have, right? Like, we saw, I just think that he's that guy that's never going to back away from any challenge. And it's a huge challenge. Fred and Scotty both out. Hey, I'm going to get some touches. And also, like, don't forget, I mean, the numbers don't lie either. Charlotte won a lot of basketball games because of their offense, not their defense. So you're probably going in a game going like, hey, I'm going to get these. Like, it's a different approach. I think it's a different approach when you know, like, hey, if we're going to be successful tonight, like Pascal talked about it, and Gary was probably, I'd imagine, in some sort of the same mind frame of I have to hit shots tonight. Like, I have to do this, you know, because our all-star Freddie's not up tonight and Scotty is not here tonight. So I just think at the end of the day, like, yes, technically, and his footwork's great. And also, I think that the challenge that he's met on the defensive end has made him even a little bit tougher on the offensive end, right? Because it comes with this whole, like, new attitude as well. It's like, I can stop and I can score. So there. And that's something that Nick Nurse challenged him with. I'm not sure if you heard the presser when Nick said those conversations started in Vegas at the Summer League when they were hanging out in a workout or something or somewhere like that. And Nick was telling him, like, this is what we do defensively. And he kind of said, oh, yeah, like, yeah, like, let's do that. But wait, you want me to score too? Like, it requires a lot when you're playing that tough on both sides of the ball. But I think when you figure it out, and again, you said coming back, it takes a couple games to probably really dive into that type of rhythm. But you saw it last night.
Yeah, and that is a great point about the rhythm thing, because I kind of went back and looked this up, where he's missed time 3 times this season, right? He's had the ankle injury, and as I mentioned, he shot 4-12 coming back, then 4-15, and then finally he breaks out. And then he also missed time earlier this season when he got a calf injury. He got tripped up by Justin Holiday in a win over the Pacers. He missed 2 games. He comes back. He shoots 3 of 16 from the field, and then 2 of 8 from the field, and then he's back to being Gary. And then he missed a game due to COVID, and he was out for about a couple of weeks because, you know, like or a week or so because a couple of games got canceled. And then when he come back, he shot 6 of 24 from the field in a loss to Philadelphia, and then 4 of 12 and then 2 of 7. So he really is a guy who, like, you know, needs to sort of play in rhythm. But when he's gotten a steady level of play over the course of games, like, that's the other part for him, is for a guy who shoots a lot of jumpers. And obviously, you know, if you're going to shoot a lot of jumpers, your numbers might go up and down. But for me, watching Gary this year, outside of when the games where he's returned from injuries and that sort of when, you know, his shot has sort of fluctuated, he's been really consistent with both his effort defensively, but also the way he's been scoring of late. And I think that, you know, honestly, just in terms of perimeter shot creation, like, would you say he's, like, maybe the best perimeter shot creator on the team? If we're just talking about trying to get separation for a jumper, get the feet down and everything like that, his numbers on pull-up jumpers is very impressive this year.
Yeah, I'd say he's right up there. But I would say, like, in terms of I think Pascal's still a pretty good shot creator, but in a different way, right? Like, yeah. Pascal's just long, and he can extend over. And when he gets into his, like, sweet spots, he's got himself, too. But, yeah, Gary's, again, his explosiveness and his just knack to score in the basketball, but also credit to him. Because you get in the gym and you get reps up, and that's muscle memory. And that takes, you know, thousands and thousands of reps with no defense. And then in practice, but then, like you said, nothing compares to getting in a game and doing that in real time. So it's all just it's kind of like a process. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's certainly up there. Yeah.
And you know what? Honestly, it's sometimes you forget, because he is really polished. He's younger than Malachi, for example. It's actually kind of amazing.
Yeah, he just turned 23. He just turned 23, right? And I think it's also just because of his demeanor. He is so, like, humble, but also just very laid back. And it's maturity too, right? His dad was a big time baller, and so he's kind of seen this life, I think, from a different angle than a lot of other young guys. And super mature guy.
Yeah, and that is funny, because we there's a couple of guys on the team who started playing basketball late. The most obvious example is Pascal. You know, he played a lot of soccer, and then 15-16 they're like, hey, you know, you're 6'8", like, maybe try the basketball thing. And he's like, okay, I guess I'll do it. And then starts playing.
I think Chris was even later, not to cut you off, but I think Chris didn't start till playing till he was like 19,
right?
Or like 18. But anyway, sorry, go on.
And Precious. Like, you have three guys on the team who are, like, key members of the rotation who started playing basketball so late. And for Gary, like, he probably started playing basketball when he was like 5, you know? Well, so even though he's younger than all these guys.
Steph Curry's been shooting on NBA rims since basically he could walk, you know, like, come on now.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. I talked about Malachi earlier, and I thought yesterday was a really positive game for him. He got to go to the podium and you know, speak his mind. And I think he's a really, you know, smart speaker. I think he really comes through, and he's very honest about what he said. And you know, I just thought overall for him, though, I was just really happy, because this has been a down year for him. He was asked outright, like, are you kind of frustrated with sort of the situation? You haven't gotten consistent minutes. And he handled that question quite professionally and responsibly. And, you know, I was just very happy for him, because, to be honest, we've seen games where a guard has been out, right? We've seen Gary, for example, miss time. And this is different. Gary's a shooting guard. You know, clearly this is more of a point guard situation. But when the Raptors have missed a guard in the lineup, Nick has still chosen not to use some of his guards on the bench, right? We've seen him not use Delano, not use Malachi, not use Svi. And Svi wasn't used yesterday either. But Malachi gets in the game, plays 26 minutes. I think Delano had a bit of foul trouble. To be honest, the whistle in the first half was quite hyperactive for me. I thought they were just calling everything. It was a little bit annoying to watch. But it opened up this opportunity for Malachi to play, on top of the fact that Fred was out. And he came in and gave you very steady production. Like, nothing like super spectacular, but it just felt like I felt the ball was secure with him. He was able to bring bring the ball up, set up the play, set up the offense, and not turn the ball over. And then when the ball swung to him, make a couple of decisive moves and score. What did you make of Malachi's game? And honestly, like, what do you sort of make of his season overall right now?
Yeah, so, and I agree with you. I got to know Malachi just a little bit last year. Obviously, we were remote, but when he was at the 905, and he's always just been, like, never too big time to talk to media. Like, he's awesome that way. So I will say I do root for him all the time. And you're right. I think I'm not him. I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I can imagine it'd be pretty frustrating, right? Just not getting your number called when you'd hope it was, because remember last year he did get a lot of minutes when Fred and Kyle were out, and he had some pretty productive nights. And so I think the plan was to probably build on that, and it hasn't necessarily gone that way, but I think you do have to applaud his professionalism. Again, playing 26 minutes last night, physically, mentally, I thought he looked ready. He looked ready to go, and I love that he did credit his 905 the night before on Monday night. Said that that helped with just the conditioning and the snapping into shape. But, when somebody asked him yesterday post-game, just like, how do you just show up and play 26 minutes. And he loved what he said. He said he was just staying engaged in every single game, just being engaged and being ready to go and taking time to understand the game plans for that game, even though maybe you haven't gotten your name called for three or four or five games, just always believing that you have to be ready. I think that's really important because you never know. That's how the sport works. You just never know what happens, who gets hurt, who goes up and down. But I thought last night he stayed on the court, because I think that he has this kind of, when Pascal's playing the way he is and when Gary's shooting the ball and OG had a really nice night, like, Malachi doesn't have to go in there and win a basketball game. Mm-hmm. He's just got to go in there and, like, be solid. And funny, because anytime somebody asks Nick Nurse about Malachi, he always talks about the defense first. Like, we want him to play full court pressure defense. Like, we believe that he's a really good on ball defender. And so I think, you know what I mean? Like, going in there and saying, I just can't play really good defense. And sure, if the shot's open, he's got to take them. I think sometimes giving up good shots is almost a turnover, right? You're winding the shot clock down. Sometimes you got to shoot the ball. But I don't think he really forced too much last night at all. And I think that was because there was, like, everyone else is playing really good. I just got to keep, running the offense, playing good defense, and getting it to the hot hand. And when you talk about a backup point guard, when you talk, in a rotation to give Fred and Gary and those guys their rest, like, you always want to sustain or push up a little more. You never want to take steps backwards. And I think that last night was hopefully for Malachi a really good just earning some confidence and trust back from the staff.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to his professionalism too, right? I mean, also him going down to the 905, getting some time in, I think that also helped, and I think Nick credited that as well. Speaking of 905, so Patrick McTumbo, the 905 head coach, was up with the team on the bench yesterday, and I was watching from that perspective. I was like, looking at the Raptors bench while also looking at the Raptors just on the court, and when Malika hit that three in the first half, Patrick McTumbo got up off his feet. And I wouldn't say he, like, did the J.R. Smith celebration, but, like, for three, but he was so happy for him. And I just thought that was great, like, honestly, he's played under Pat both years here, last year in the G League bubble. This year, he's come down a couple of times. And just to see Patrick being that happy for a guy was quite sweet. And I think, it's exactly what you said. When you look at the overall game from Malachi yesterday, it's a lot simpler when guys are all just making their shots. So for him, I mean, you look at the four baskets he made. One was a catch-and-shoot three. He made it. Another situation, he was attacking a closeout. Quick crossover, get to the baseline against James Bouknight, get his shoulders past the guy, scoop layup. No help on the rim, which was very helpful. The Hornets just, I don't know, they just have a defensive strategy. Two on the ball on the perimeter, nobody at the basket. Okay, that's an interesting strategy. And then another time where he really crossed up Kelly Oubre. He's got him set up going to his left, and then quick crossover for the baseline drive. Kind of did like a wrong foot layup, just to kind of get it up there quickly before anybody could rotate. But as usual, nobody rotating for the Hornets. Their defense could definitely use some work. So I thought he was great. And I thought, honestly, like, the other backup point guard too was Delano Banton. I thought Delano played great too. And just seeing the guys get down to the G League level, do their business there, get themselves sharp. And then it literally couldn't have worked out any better. They got all this time and all this reps yesterday between, Delano, Malachi and Yuta. And then the day after, boom, they're in the game and they're producing, And I thought Delano, I think his three-point shooting looks a lot better of late.
Yeah, and I mean, the timing of it could not have been. I think there was a realization, right, that a six-man rotation just is tough. It's tough to sustain.
It's tough.
So yeah. It was almost like it was really perfect, and really the 905. I think they're home for 8 games. I think they're halfway through that now. Of course, the Raptors are on the road. I think Isaac is assigned tonight to the 905. Mm-hmm. But just the one thing the Raptors have been just tremendous at, maybe the best in the entire NBA over the years, is just the consistency of utilizing their G League. I don't like to say go down because I don't think it's a go down. It's just kind of going over just with the way that they run. Like they don't, I don't think that the 905 and it's considered this huge demotion. Because it's like Utah asked to go. Like sometimes guys ask to go, and because they're so close, and I think it says a lot that Patrick's there and cheering on for them, because as a head coach, sometimes that throws you off and it throws your rhythm and your game plan off, especially sometimes when these decisions are made so last minute where it's like, hey, you're getting so-and-so tonight. You know he's probably going to start. You know he's got to get touches. Sometimes I can't imagine that always being the most welcoming thing for a team. But the fact that those guys are cheered on by their coaches and their teammates with the 905, I think that speaks volumes of just the relationship between the two programs. And with Delano, the one thing I would say, and I love what Nick kind of said, is they actually debated starting him last night. And if you notice, they got him in pretty quick, because what it did was it got Chris back to the bench. Again, not a demotion, but Chris's role, where he's been really successful, is coming off the bench. And they wanted to kind of keep him in that frame or mindset. And I thought that was brilliant from the coaches, and it worked out really well.
Yeah, I think it definitely kept people in their roles, and it was nice. Like, the Raptors got really good boosts off the bench yesterday. And I think even, like, Chris, he started. But, as you mentioned, Nick and the coaching staff came up with this plan to essentially sub him early, bring him back in. And it kind of replicated the same kind of boost that you would get from Chris. I thought Chris in the second half was just such a warrior. Like, there was a lot of, like, rough play happening and a lot of, like, contested rebounds. And he just kept going up strong and, you know, finishing strong, you know, getting fouled hard at the basket and finishing plays. So, he did a great job. And then, you know, the last thing I want to touch on with you is just the overall experience at the arena. It's weird. It's just so weird. Like, you what's know, the weirdest thing about it for you in the empty gym?
You know, I catch myself doing this. And I actually, even when I was calling the games, the analyst share a couple times, like, where someone would hit a big shot and you're just like, man, you almost just envision what the place would have been like, because there have been some pretty awesome moments in the last month, basically, right? Since there haven't been fans, that, I mean, you do feel a lot for the guys that's, you know, playing for the fans, especially in Toronto, is something that I think that is important to the guys that play here because of how awesome that place gets. But there's also just this whole realization that those decisions are being made for a reason. I'm not going to sit here and say if they're wrong or if they're right or whatever, but there's a reason that they're being made. And the reality is that the games have to go on. And I would say, I just, even last night, I was like, man, I can't wait till this place just starts filling up a little bit more. So I'd like to think we're on the other side of it, you know, and I think that everyone's been pretty responsible. I know that they're protecting the coaches and players and everyone that works with the team, but I know that's the political answer. I mean, Nick Nurse said it best. It sucks. It absolutely sucks. And they probably feel quite a bit of energy on the road. But again, like, I like to believe that we're closer to getting back to where we'd like to be up here.
Yeah. Yeah. And the weirdest thing for me is just, like, I totally agree with everything you said, by the way. Like, it's actually kind of cool for the media, I would say, just because, like, everything you can go anywhere you want. Everybody there is very important. Like, you can see exactly where Masaya and Bobby are sitting. They're like one section over from the media. They're just chilling there. They're hanging out with their two cell phones, you know, like probably making trades or whatever, like just making, doing general manager deals. Stuff.
Yeah.
And then, but like, the weirdest thing for me though is like they keep doing the game ups, like they're trying to maintain it and keep it the same, right? So like they starting intros and everything like that, like shout out to Srizzy and everything, like they're still doing a great job. Herbie Kuhn obviously still creating the atmosphere. But then the funniest thing to me is, like, they'll keep doing things like, let's get loud. And they'll put up the graphic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, who are you talking to me directly? I mean, I will. I am quite loud. I've excused myself to the 600 level so I could enjoy the game as I would, let's say, you know, as a fan. But still, like, it's just odd, you know, like, and they're kind of like simulating the crowd noise. And it's got to be difficult.
You do? The crowd noise helps. I think the crowd noise does help. It's weird because they have different levels of crowd noise, if you notice.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's cool. Like, it does for a second. You're like, oh, like, you do feel a little jump from, like, yeah, they it's not just this, like, a we're, what is it, 2022 now. There is no more just, like, standard crowd noise. Now there's different levels of crowd noise. So I think they do a good job, but it's just, like, you know, like, not like we were saying, Gary, nothing simulates the real game. Like, nothing compares to, like, 19,000 people in there, like, blowing the roof off, you know? Like, it just, it is what it is. But I will say, too, I don't mean to cut you off, but I think, like, let's keep the glass half full, because you're right, there have been some, like, kind of, I guess, like, things we would never experience. But that picture of Masai sitting in the empty arena that kind of went viral, I honestly was like, the first time I saw that, I was like, that's going to be in some encyclopedia or some kind of like historic picture down the road, like 30 years from now, to be like, this is crazy. And it, like, when I saw that, it was like, definitely, again, there's no other organization that has that moment. So let's just say, hey, roll with it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what they're telling to get loud, is they want Masai to get off his phone and start jumping up and down to make the fourth quarter push. So, all right, Amy, thank you for making time. Honestly, that would definitely make it into the history books as well. So, Amy, thank you for making time. I always look forward to seeing you on the broadcast in whatever roles that you're in. You're doing a great job, and I appreciate you making time.
Yeah, thanks for the call, guys. And one day, Alex will join us. I'm still very offended. I'll just say that. I'm just kidding.
No, don't worry. I'm sure he's listening. So,
Alex, thanks, you got Alex. That, great to chat with you, Alex. Great to chat to you. All right.
All right.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you. I think that's a good spot for us to take a break. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you've been listening to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Swim Lou. I will be joined by Vivek Jacob of Raptors.com, as we do every Wednesday. And with Vivek, I wanted to maybe look ahead to the Bulls game just a little bit. Let's check in on how the Bulls are doing, check in on how DeMar is doing, but also mostly take a look at OG Anunoby's year this year, because, you know, OG's a, I don't know if it's like he's been lost in the shuffle in a way, but I just felt like there was a lot of momentum for OG coming into the season. There was definitely everywhere you looked, whether it was The Ringer, whether it was CBS, whether it was other places, like, there's just a lot of talk for OG as sort of like, you know, most improved and you know, making this next leap, because he did have a really successful year in Tampa. He did have moments where he was given the ball and given a lot of touches, and I guess that was the expectation, especially when you look at preseason. I definitely was super excited about OG. I was excited about a lot of players, but I thought OG in particular was going to take this jump. And then he kind of took the jump, but then people didn't really talk about it, right? Like, it just wasn't like a thing that became a big story. It's not a story that we follow every game. Like, you know, in a way where anytime Scotty does anything, there's a lot of coverage about what Scotty's doing. Pascal is taking this moment. Fred has obviously become the moment with the fact that he's making this all-star push. Gary, even to a lesser degree, but even he is taking a big step, and sort of like, there's been a lot of conversations about Gary. OG, he's taken that step in a way, but, you know, there's still not this kind of coverage. So I definitely wanted to check in on OG, who is averaging a career high in both steals at 1.7 per game and also points at 18.8. And we're joined by Vivek Jacob of Raptors.com. And I just, guys, want to ask you out top, like, what are your impressions of OG Anunoby this season and sort of the progress he's made based on the fact that, you know, he has consistently improved his game in the last, like, 5 or 6 years. And we're seeing a player who's averaging close to 20 points per game.
Yeah, I think he's shown steady growth. Obviously, his role now on the team is different than what he had at the start of the season when Pascal Siakam was out, and we didn't know what Scottie Barnes could be as a player. So he was, as Fred VanVleet called him, the number one option on offense, and that's how they were using him. We saw those first couple games were really difficult. He was trying to figure things out. And then I thought he hit a groove, and he was playing really well, and he was really showing off what he had developed over the summer in terms of being able to create off the bounce. and create the shot for himself. And then, you know, he has the hip pointer. Obviously, the entire roster is dealing with COVID issues, and he's come back, and he hasn't quite been the same since. The three-point shooting, I think, is kind of a letdown right now. You know, 15 games in December and January, he's shooting about 31% from three, which is very much below his standard. He's established himself as a very good three-point shooter, especially a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. So overall, I would say he's having a solid season. But maybe a bit below the expectations that he set for himself coming in.
Yeah, and by the way, as you mentioned, you know, after the first two games where he like shot 3 of 17, 4 of 17, and honestly, it's not even necessarily about the numbers so much as just like watching the experience. Like it was just like so many times where he would like trip up or like didn't get his feet set or whatever, and it was just like, wow, this moment might be too big for him. Like he really responded in a big way after that, you know. Between the first two games of the season where he was just really off and the time where he got the hip pointer injury, he averaged 21 points per game, shot it at 46% from the field, 40% from three on 7.5 attempts per game. And I think it really culminated in that game. I think that was the game where Fred called him number one option, right? In that game where they went to New York and, you know, gave him the bing-bong experience, shot, you know, OG had, what do you have in that game? Like 36 points, 13 of 27 shooting. 4-12 from three, got to the free throw line seven times, and just like doing all that while handling Julius Randle. And I was like, wow, okay, like he is kind of just making that jump. And then I guess the hip pointer did kind of delay his progress this season. I mean, like, do you think it's just that? Like, he was in a great rhythm, and then he had the hip pointer injury and he missed about a month, and he just hasn't like fully found his rhythm after that? Or do you think also sometimes it's just like when you watch OG, does he fully feel comfortable in his new role where he's asked to create a little bit more?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think it's the fact that he has come back from this hip pointer injury, and now the team clearly has, you know, Pascal Siakam as the number one option, Fred VanVleet as the number two option. And then, honestly, it is kind of a toss-up, right? If Gary Trent Jr. really has it going, then he kind of looks like that third option. There's times where Scottie Barnes looks great, and then he steps into it. And then there's OG as well, who's obviously capable. So I think there is sort of that figuring out process. And being the third guy is kind of the toughest role to figure out, right? Like, we saw Chris Bosh when he went to Miami, that was a big adjustment for him. Kevin Love goes to, you know, Cleveland. That was a big adjustment for him. That third guy is such a pivotal member of the team. Obviously, we're not comparing them to championship teams in terms of what this team is capable of, but just in terms of role, that third guy is the most difficult one to figure out. And I think once OG gets that three-point shot going, then things will look a lot better, because that is one of the primary requirements of his role now, right? When you're playing off Pascal, when you're playing off Fred, when you get those catch and shoot opportunities, make the most of them. And then, you know, I think we've seen a little bit too now, because he has that confidence in creating his own shot, late clock scenarios, he's not looking to get rid of the ball, right? He's saying, okay, yeah, I've got it. I will go up with it. And so I think that's something that he has to improve. I was looking at some of the pull-up shooting numbers. Now, he's only taking, averaging a couple 3-point pull-up attempts per game, but he's shooting 24% on them, right? So that's something that needs to improve.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, that speaks to just those overall process of when he's creating for himself, when he's looking to attack and break down the defense by himself. Like, that's where he's running into issues. I think, you know, last night, for example, was a perfect game, which is a reminder of like, look, when OG is just playing the role of finisher, when he's catching and shooting because Pascal is creating, even when other guys are just swinging the ball over around to him, like, he's catching and shooting, he's very efficient at that. If he is finishing around the basket, he's very efficient at that. Pascal set him up a couple times running the lane in transition. He gets early post position, seals a guy, goes in for a layup. We saw him do a lot of that against Dallas as well, which is another game he's had. He's been quite efficient of late. And you look at it, 8 of 14 from the field yesterday, you know, he's got 24 points from that. Like, that's perfect. You know, if you can get that every single night, you would take it. But I think the other issue is just like when he tries to create for himself, and I think he does have ambitions to do it, I think that's also a part of his game that he needs to develop. That part is just not fully baked for him just yet, right? When you look at his overall isolations on the season, he doesn't isolate that much, but right now on the season, he's 19 for 62 on ISOs this year. He's only scoring 0.73 points per possession, which is quite low. You would want to be around one. And then, you know, he's in the 24th percentile on ISOs. When you look at the pull-up jumpers, as you're mentioning, he's not shooting that well from the three. Even on twos, where we've seen him take a lot of, like, you know, attack the closeout long, you know, two off of, you know, one or two dribbles. Or, you know, we'll see him try to go for that spin move where he gets in the post, he kind of momentum stops, but then he pivots and then goes for the turnaround jumper. He hasn't been reliable on that either, right? So it's kind of interesting. And I think, you know, when you really break it down, I think the thing that was that really stood out to me was when you look at, based on, you know, his shooting percentage, based on how many dribbles he takes, it basically drops like by 10 percentage points each time he takes an additional dribble. And so when you take when he takes zero dribbles, he's at 61 effective field goal percentage, which is great. It's fantastic. It's about as efficient as you could possibly expect. When he takes one or two dribbles, it's at 51%. When he takes 3 to 6 dribbles, it's down to 37%. And when it's 6+, it's, you know, not very good just in general. So it's like that's always a part of his game that people kind of point to, is just the handle and the coordination and the ability to get to a shot. Do you see any progress on that front? Do you see like maybe the numbers don't look that great right now, but there's a process to sort of how he's trying to get better on that front and try to address his weakness?
Yeah, I think the process is the most important part. This is something I think the Raptors will have to play the long game with in terms of establishing that mid-range game. One of the things I was looking at is how does he shoot from 16 feet to the three-point line? So right now, this season, he's at 28.6%. For comparison's sake, Pascal Siakam this season is at 38.6%, so 10% higher. Usually, if you're looking at the greats, they're at about 45%. Both Kawhi Leonard, DeMar DeRozan, they're 45%. If you really want to get silly, Kevin Durant, guess what he's shooting this season from 16 feet to the three-point line?
I would say north of 50.
Yeah, 57%.
Oh, my God.
So that's just silly, right? No one's asking OG Anunoby to do that. So how does he work his way, first of all, from 28%, let's get that up, you know, closer to 35 to 40 range, right? Obviously, the ultimate goal it would be that 45% range where, you know, DeMar and Kawhi and those guys are. But for now, how do we get to that 35 to 40 range? If he can work his way to that point, then I think everything else opens up for him. Because, you know, I've made this point about Pascal as well, where he doesn't have the greatest handle. And he admitted that last night as well.
Oh, yeah.
He did say that,
yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't have the greatest handle. But can you make it good enough where you need where you can get to the spots that you need to, right? And so with OG Anunoby, if that 16 to 3-point line shot become something that he can depend on, you know, say 45% of the time, then, you know, the handle only needs to be so much of a threat, right? If you're at a point now where your biggest threat is at the rim, if you're not getting a catch and shoot three, then you have to get all the way to the basket, right?
Right.
That's where I think he needs to level up. And then once you see that come along, again, no one's asking him to go from 28% all the way to 58%. If you can make that leap from 28 to 35, then we go from 35 to 40 and so on and so forth, then you'll see him really ascend.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I think, you know, this kind of reminds me of what I was talking about with Amy in the first half. Is something that Gary does really well. It's just like he takes a lot of these mid-range shots, but you notice his footwork, the way he's able to get his feet down, set, even when he's attacking off the dribble and rise up for a steady shot. And obviously he's got great touch and everything like that. He's a guard, he's got more experience, whatever. But like, I think that's the part for OG where, you know, when he drives and he stops, which is usually when he gets in trouble. For usually I would like him to kick it out, but when he drives and stops and tries to make a play, that's when he really ends up settling for some of these contested shots, because he doesn't have that same footwork as Gary to get it off. But I think the comparison to Pascal is interesting too, because, you know, Pascal has been a guy who's been a third option before. Right. When we saw in that championship season, Pascal was incredible as a third option. His efficiency was sky high. His true shooting was like 65%. He shot like 55% from the field, hit like 38% from three, was averaging 18 points. He won most improved player. And obviously the Raptors won the championship as well. You know, when you look at Pascal's progression as a guy who was a featured scorer, right? Well, because when he first came into the league, he was definitely not a featured scorer by any means. He was like, if there was ever a sixth option on offense, he was a sixth option on offense. And then to see the point where he's gotten to now, where he's handling, he's scoring, he's creating, he's doing everything. Do you see, you know, or I guess where on that trajectory do you see OG Anunoby, or do you even see OG on that trajectory at all? You know, is that a comparison to Pascal or not?
Well, I think when you look at their style of play, when they have the ball in their hands, it's hard to see it because OG, I would say, is definitely more robotic than Pascal, right? Like Pascal has that slitheriness to him where he's able to, you know, use some hesitation, use, you know, his dribble effectively enough to create that separation. And OG Anunoby, I think, is a bit more laborious when it comes to that. But, you know, again, if you want to break it down to the numbers, I highlighted that 16-foot to three-point range. Pascal Siakam, yeah, he's at 38-39% now, but last in 2019-20, when he actually made the All-NBA team, he was down at 29-30%. So he's elevated by 10% in that area, right? So it's just about continuing to get the repetition. Again, this might be the long game with OG Anunoby, where Nick Nurse always says, right, you have to be taking the shots before you're actually consistently making the shots. And so I think OG Anunoby getting the reps, taking those shots off the dribble, those pull-up opportunities, once that becomes a normalized part of his game, then steadily I think you will see the growth in him actually making the shots.
Yeah, and I think, you know what, the thing with Pascal too is just like he beats you with the fact that he has that wiggle, right? He's able to shake you a little bit. He's got the quick spin moves, everything like that. And then he has the length too. He is like a bit longer than OG. So when he's in the post, he's able to combine these two things. He can beat you with two ways, right? Even if you're just talking about the jumper and stuff like that, obviously he has more length to get it off. But in general, when you're going to basket, he has two ways to beat you. OG has a different way to beat you, which is that he has a lot of strength, right? But he doesn't have the rest of it. Well, he's definitely going to bully you. He's going to push you under the basket. You're going to have to double team. And at that point, it's up to OG to either get to the right finish or kick it out, right? And I think maybe the kick it out option for him is still something that he can still explore more. But ultimately, you know, he has something that Pascal doesn't even have, which is that like power game. And, you know, in a way, it almost reminds you of like different types of strikers. You know what I'm saying? Like OG might be more of the Lukaku style of striker. You know, Pascal might be more of I guess, I don't know. Chelsea doesn't have a lot of other nice strikers to compare it to. But do you see what I'm saying, though? Like, it's kind of different,
I'll give
right?
you a throwback. You know, Pascal Siakam, he's kind of like a Dennis Bergkamp, right? He does a little bit of everything.
Oh, wow. He almost gets a triple-double, and he gets a Dennis Bergkamp comparison.
There you go, man. Hey, I have to bring the Dutch into it. We're going to go into soccer mode here. Alex, I know he's sweating right now, but hey, Alex.
No, he's looking up who that is, man.
Alex needs to think about getting Derek his gift, man. It's been a long time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, I mean, I guess we're not supposed to. Are we supposed to spoil it on air? We're not supposed to spoil it on air. Let's let's pivot away from that. Yeah, how's United doing, man? I'm out of Raptors topics. I mean, Raptors Bulls tonight. You know, the Bulls got some injuries. You know, hopefully the Raptors play the same level of defense and they should be able to handle it. No problem for me. But you know, yeah. How are you feeling about United these days? We got a minute of this.
I mean, yeah, it's better now. A couple of wins on the board, and you know, Marshall is hopefully happy now going to Sevilla. But I think, you know, Ragnik may be figuring something out with the 4-3-3 and getting guys in the positions that they're best suited for. So hopefully, you know, they can build towards a Champions League spot for next year. But yeah, as far as trophies are concerned, I'm not expecting much, man. I think that's more something that you can think about. Hey, City, I think they'll start to slip a little bit. I think you guys are still in it.
Oh, we got the games in hand, baby. one game in hand to make up 9 points. Yeah, I mean, honestly, for Liverpool, it's just they don't have the same like depth as City, unfortunately. But I mean, I don't know. Of late, you're seeing guys step up. Like, say Jota's about as informed as anybody in the league. And I don't know, man. United, like, you know what? Honestly, there's always so much stress and everything about the season, and maybe there's rightful reason for that. I mean, you guys are still in fourth. You know, it's still better than Arsenal, Tottenham. Unfortunately, that's the conversation you guys are in these days, but
yep.
That's not bad. You'd be pretty happy with fourth, no, on the season?
Hey, Champions League. That's all I want. Champions League football. don't get dumped into Europa by the end of the group stage. That's all I kind of wish for these days.
No, this guy said play-in for what? No, you will take the play-in. You'll take the Champions League play-in if you need to. So, V, I appreciate you. Thanks for joining us on the show, as always. You know, and that does it for us today. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you've been listening to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, and please rate and review our show. Thanks once again to my guests, Amy Otterberg and Vivek Jacob, and our board producer, Derek Brandeo. As a programming note, I'm off tomorrow. And as well as on Friday. So my producer and co-host Alex Wong will be handling the hosting duties. I will be listening and I'll probably text into the text line at 590-590. Alex, please leave my family alone. Do not book my brother or my parents. Thank you, and I'll talk to you soon.